Good morning, everyone. My name is Commissioner Sherry Haugen-Huffert, and I am calling this regular commission meeting to order. It is 10 o'clock a.m. on February 8th, 2023. As you can tell, I'm the only commissioner here. We have a bill that is in our wheelhouse and being heard by a committee this morning. So with that, the commissioners, Randy Christman, who is a portfolio holder, needs to be there. So what we're going to do is we're going to recess this regular commission meeting until about 10:30 a.m. So we're recessed at this time.
Good morning. We will reconvene this regular scheduled meeting of the Public Service Commission. It is February 8th, 2023. It is 10:33. I'm Randy Christman, Chairman of the Committee, joined by Commissioners Sherry Haugen-Huffert and Julie Fedorchak. So we have a quorum. I don't have any opening comments. Commissioner Haugen-Huffert, do you?
No, I don't.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
No, me neither.
Okay. We have, I'll just say the reason that we gaveled in and recessed was one of our bills came up for discussion in one of the committees downstairs, and so went down and addressed that. We have seven items on the consent calendar this morning. I move approval of those plus the minutes.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay. Moving on to our regular calendar, I move the commission adopt the order in Northwest Communications / Mid-State Telephone Company, Portal Exchange, Public Convenience and Necessity, case number PU-22-408, and Northwest Communications / Mid-State Telephone Company designated eligible carrier application, case number PU-22-409.
Second.
On November 15th of last year, Northwest Communications Cooperative and Mid-State Telephone Company filed a joint application requesting authorization for, and I'll refer to Northwest as NCC, for NCC to provide local exchange telecommunications services in the area that's known as the Portal Exchange, which is currently served by Mid-State. So that's the first request. They also filed a joint application requesting that NCC be designated as an eligible telecommunications carrier in the Portal Exchange. That's the second request here. We issued a notice of opportunity for a consolidated hearing that provided until January 27th for comments and requests for a full hearing. No comments or requests for hearing were received. A few things about these two cases. NCC is a North Dakota cooperative association with their office in Ray, North Dakota. And so getting into the first request on the public convenience and necessity, NCC holds certificates of public convenience and necessity to provide local exchange services in 16 telephone exchanges in North Dakota right now. Mid-State holds a CPCN inside the Portal Exchange area, and in that exchange area they serve 90 voice customers and 57 internet access lines, so it's a small exchange. Mid-State would continue to provide local exchange service until all members of the Portal Exchange have been connected to NCC, so there'll be no interim lack of service. Mid-State's portal, the community portal, customers will not experience any immediate change to rates, terms, or conditions of service. NCC plans to offer voice over internet service to portal customers. They also plan to upgrade the customer premises equipment at each customer location and bury fiber optic cable to the locations, as they have in their other exchanges. So this recommendation finds that NCC is fit and able to provide services to the customers served in the portal telephone exchange, that the services NCC proposes to provide are adequate, and that NCC has the technical, financial, and managerial ability to provide service to this area. It also finds that with NCC being granted a CPCN, Mid-State's CPCN should be relinquished. Their second question regarding the ETC status: the Federal Telecommunications Act of 1996 provides for financial support to a common carrier that, among other things that I won't repeat, is designated as an ETC. That is a requirement to get the financial support. To be designated as an ETC, the carrier must offer each of the services designated for Federal Universal Service Support and make available Lifeline service to qualifying low-income customers. NCC affirms that it will continue to meet the obligations of an ETC in the portal telephone exchange, and also affirms that there is no waiver being requested. So this recommendation finds that NCC is qualified under the Federal Telecommunications Act for designation, and it is in the public interest that NCC be designated as an ETC.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio. I'll turn it over to you, Commissioner Hogan.
Thank you so much. I move the Commission adopt the order in Northern States Power Company Advanced Metering Infrastructure, AMI, Tariff and Rates, case number PU22-180.
Second.
So on May 2nd, NSP filed an application to implement a manual meter reading rider. On May 25th, the Commission issued a notice of opportunity for hearing, and no response were received. We as a commission had some questions, so on July 6th, we discussed this matter with NSP and the commission staff during an informal hearing. On August 4th, NSP filed a modification to the proposed tariff based on the commissioner's input during the informal hearing. Then on October 17th, the commission discussed this matter again with the commission staff during a work session because we had further questions regarding it. And then on December 21st, 2022, NSP filed a supplement information based on the work session. So NSP, with their smart meter, has an opt-out option for their customers. And this rider will require a one-time payment of $40 for customers who opt out prior to the AMI installation. But if the customer, if a smart meter is installed and then the customer decides they don't want it, then they'll be charged $80. So that was a lot of the discussion we had with the NSP regarding that one-time payment. But the other part of it was for those that keep the old meter, the reading of the meter, and the one and the fee that goes along with it, and there was quite some discussion regarding that. So on December 21st, NSP did file a supplemental filing that laid out several manual meter reading fee options from $5, $10, or $15 per month. This commission believes that a $10 monthly manual meter reading fee allows NSP an opportunity to recover its costs while not being overly punitive to customers who do not wish to have an advanced meter installed at their service location. So having this matter before us, the commission finds NSP's proposed tariff and rates for its proposed manual reading rider filed is just and reasonable, and that utilizing a $10 per month manual meter reading rate.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I will say I'm not going to vote for this. You know, I find it frustrating when companies trot out new ideas and promote it with real general terms. Oh, they're smart meters, you know, to try and make anyone who doesn't like what's being done to feel dumb. And there might be many reasons why people don't want this. It doesn't take a dumb person to maybe not be fully embracing of just every new technology that comes out. We discussed it, and you know, I don't remember the statistics now, but they assume a very, very low rate of non-acceptance. And if that's the case, the cost of reading a handful of meters is not going to be so substantial. I think it could be absorbed. But I do think, especially their original proposal at $15 a month to read these, is not reasonable. For one thing, if these meters are in fact so smart, you would think that they would be able to do what the previous, presumably dumb meters, could do, and that's allow them to estimate for a while. During the COVID situation, we had lots of people on estimated payments, and then they were trued up at a given point, and now apparently these smart meters just can't work anymore. But I really feel like they're coming up with a big number in order to just put a foot on the neck of these customers and force them into taking it. I was willing to accept a surcharge on the manual readings, but not this high. I don't find it as being reasonable, and I do think it's mentioned in here that it's not being overly punitive. I think it is being overly punitive, so I'm going to vote no.
Is there any further discussion?
I'll be voting in favor of the motion. I think that a $10 meter reading is actually probably a little bit below cost. And if this is not something that we want to make it available. I was supportive of making it available because there was an option on the table to not even make a manual reading option available. Other states, other companies have gone that route with this technology. It's just, we've got a new era of technology. It operates differently. It has a lot different capabilities and can provide the company and the customer with a lot more information. I think that's why it's called smart. But we decided to provide an option for folks to have a manual reading, and the $10 I think is the absolute minimum amount that you could charge without having other customers subsidize this. And so I think it's very fair. You can hardly buy anything for $10 anymore. I mean, just the gas alone and the staff time to go out and do a manual reading, I think easily could add up to $10 per reading. So I think it's fair. I think it's the right approach, and it allows for folks to choose not to have one if they so desire and pay the cost of doing so.
I just would like to add one thing. You know, there was a lot of discussion on this and a lot of staff time and company time. Some of us even didn't even want at the beginning the option to even allow customers to have the option because it's such a small percent. I think it was less than 1%. So I think there was a lot of compromise on this, what the company wanted the customers to have an option. So some of us conceded to that. And then, so how do we make this work? So that's all I have, Steve. So,
is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay.
Nay.
Motion is approved.
I move the commission adopt the order in Montana Dakota Utilities Applied Blockchain Office, Dickey County, Public Convenience and Necessity, case number PU22-366, and Montana Dakota Utilities Company Applied Blockchain Data Processing Extension, Public and Convenience and Necessity, case number PU22-370.
Second.
T.
Did we miss SH2, though? I might have gotten stuck in your paper.
I did.
But do you want to jump?
You've got the motion made. I'm comfortable with that.
Sure, me too.
I'll go back to that.
So let's stay on three.
Okay.
They get stuck together sometimes.
So. Yeah. So on September 16th, 2022, MDU filed a temporary authority permit application to provide power to Applied Blockchain in Dickey County. On September 16th, 2022, MDU filed a temporary authority permit application to provide power to Applied Data Processing Center with its meter located in Dickey County. On October 7th, the commission received a notice of protest and request for hearing from Dakota Valley Electric Cooperative in the cases. On October 12th, the commission issued an order on protest and request of hearing denying Dakota Valley's protest and request for hearing on the applications for temporary authority and ordering MDU to file an application for permanent authority within 20 days. On October 14th, MDU filed an application for permanent authority to extend three-phase service to Applied office located at the Applied site, and also filed an application for permanent authority to extend the three-phase service to the Applied data center. So on the 24th of October, Dakota Valley filed a protest and requested a hearing on both MDU's application for permanent authority. On October 17th, the commission issued a notice of hearing scheduling a public hearing to be held on Monday, December 19th, in the commission hearing room in which it was held. So these are known as a TIA case. And there are 10 factors which we go through, and they were noticed in the public hearing, so I won't go through them. But it was a lengthy hearing, about 8 hours, on hearing testimony from Applied Blockchain, hearing from MDU, Dakota Valley, and other people such as Tom Mellon from Central Power. And although we went through each of the 10 factors, and so I'm going to go to the order, and I'm just really going to summarize this instead of going through everything. So I'm going to go to the balance and weight of factors, which was determined, which we looked at all the finding of facts. And the commission finds that the public convenience and necessity reasonably requires approval of MDU's application because of the following. The location of the lines of MDU's three-phase system to serve Applied office is shorter than the proposed extension of Dakota Valley's three-phase extension. Service to the Applied Data Center for both entities would require construction by MDU and from MDU's substation. The location of MDU lines and infrastructure results in Applied site being served by MDU. MDU will serve the site, Applied site, more economically when considering both the cost to extend service and the actual cost to the customer as reflected in the rates for service. At the rates provided by Dakota Valley, Applied Digital would not be able to economically operate at this location. Both suppliers, MDU and Dakota Valley, are able and qualified to furnish safe and reliable electrical service to the office and the data center. However, there is a shorter three-phase extension to the office from MDU's adjacent 230 kV substation, and uncertainty as to whether service from MDU using MDU's substation would be available for Dakota Valley. As a result, MDU is better suited to serve the designated site. MDU can best develop electrical service in the area in which the site is located and would not result in wasteful duplication or investment of service or unreasonably interfere with the service or system of Dakota Valley. While the customer prefers electrical service from MDU, customer preference is not controlling in the issue of public convenience and necessity. So based on the factors weighed, we rule in favor of MDU to serve this.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
I'll go back to SH2. I move the commission issue a notice of public input sessions in MDU Utilities Company 2022 electric rate increase application case number PU22-194.
Second.
Public information sessions on this application in this case will be held on April 5th at 12 o'clock p.m. noon Central Time, and will continue until comments are finished, and again on April 5th at 5 o'clock p.m. Central Time, and will continue until comments are finished in this hearing room, the commission hearing room on 12th floor at the state capitol. The public information sessions are in result of MDU on May 16th filing with the commission an increase in rates for electrical service. They are seeking a 12.3% increase over current rates. So the commission will hold these public hearings at the request, and the issues to be considered are what the value of MDU's property use and useful for the service and convenience for the public in North Dakota. What is MDU's rate of return on its property use and useful for the service and convenience of the public in North Dakota? What is reasonable and just? What rate and charges are necessary to provide a just and reasonable rate of return? And are MDU's rate schedules designed in such a manner that they will result in a basis of charge to its customers that is just and reasonable without discrimination? So there's a lot of avenues for the public input to be received. The public is encouraged to view the public input session electronically on our website or listen via telephone. The commission will receive public input through the following methods: in person, as previously described, written public input may be submitted through email at ndpsc@nd.gov, or by mail addressed to Public Service Commission, 600 East Boulevard Avenue, Department 408, Bismarck, North Dakota, 58505, or by telephone. The public input sessions are not considered part of the technical hearing, and the discussion at the session will not become part of the evidence reviewed by the commission in decision making. However, please note the discussion will aid the commission and its staff in identifying areas of concern to members of the public and help consumers better understand MDU's request. Anyone wishing to become a party to this proceeding is encouraged to file a petition to intervene as early as possible. Petitions to intervene must be received by February 28, 2023. The petition to intervene does not need to be filed to participate in the public information session. There was a lot of information presented here, but the bottom line is we want the public to have the opportunity to come before the commission on April 5th to discuss any of their concerns they have with MDU's rate case. They have a lot of opportunity to present their public opinion. And if they have any questions, I'm going to say please contact us at the PSC to discuss this case and how you can become involved if you so choose. Thank you.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Thank you. I move the Commission adopt the order in Northern States Power Company Renewable Resource Cost Recovery 2023 rates, case number PU22-368.
Second.
Thank you. On September 19th, NSP filed a request for approval for its 2023 Renewable Energy Rider. The purpose of this rider is to recover from NSP electrical consumers' costs of renewable energy and generation not presently reflected in its retail sales. NSP would recover costs for two new projects and two previously approved projects. So on January 23rd of this past year, an updated application for approval was filed with the Commission reflecting a change of the implementation dates from January 1st, 2023, and moving it to March 1st. This rate would be applied to all energy billed to each customer effective March 1st. So the NSP's proposed 2023 renewable rider revenue requirement is of $5,237,041. The months of January and February will be collected in the approved 2022 rate, while beginning in March and forward will be recovered. So it will be a total of 10 months. So the 2023 rate is calculated in a 2.6 mils, resulting in a residential consumer using an average of 750 kilowatts per month will experience a monthly bill increase of 53 cents. So this will again be for two past projects and two new projects.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Continuing on with cost recovery riders.
Tis the season.
I move the Commission adopt the order in Montana Dakota Utilities Company Generation Resource Cost Recovery Rates, case number PU-22-400.
Second.
Thank you.
Can I interrupt? Did we just complete number four?
Yeah.
Okay. At the end, I'm going to have some comments on that. I was thinking them through, and I missed making some comments. I apologize for that, but go ahead and proceed.
Okay. Do you want to make note at the end? Okay. We have a motion, right, Julie?
Yep.
Okay. So, cost recovery rider on... This is regarding MDU. On November 1st, Montana Dakota Utilities filed a change to its generation resource recovery rates to reflect a 2023 projected cost for its Lewis and Clark internal combustion engines unit. So on November 30th, we issued a notice of opportunity for hearing, and no responses were received. On January 11th, an informal meeting was held to discuss MDU's request to modify the financial incentive. And then on January 31st, MDU filed a supplemental information. So when we met with MDU, we as staff really had some questions regarding MDU's request that the financial incentive rate approved at an annual recovery rate of 0.79%. So that was approved. And then they wanted the change to reflect the five-year treasury rate updated monthly. And so we had some discussion on that, and we as a staff did not approve that. We did not see that. So the commission determined that that financial incentive rate remain at the annual recovery rate of 0.79%. So we came to consensus there. The only other part is the implementation rate date for the cost recovery, which was refiled in March 1st, with 2023 revenue cost requirement. The change in revenue requirement resulted in a decrease to the average residential customer of 0.15 per month or $1.80 per year. So that was the that's the motion, that we keep the financial incentive rate remain at the annual recovery cost of 0.79%, and the average residential customer will see a decrease of $1.80 per year in this recovery rider.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
So just a couple additional thoughts on this one. It's kind of a confusing rider, and I think riders are confusing in general for ratepayers. So this one is a tool to collect the costs of new generating units, not wind farms, but other generation, that aren't included in rate base. So they have this these Lewis and Clark RICE units, reciprocating internal combustion engine units, out at the Lewis and Clark facility that are included. That's the main generation resource here. Then they also have this financial incentive, which was approved by, it was a tool approved by the last legislature to allow the commission to give companies an incentive for entering into power purchase agreements for dispatchable resources. The company had actually entered into one of those prior to the approval of that incentive, and so there was a lot of discussion at the time about how much of an incentive they should get for something they already did. So the incentive is really low, 0.79%. The company in this filing had asked to increase that incentive, and we are in this order denying that and keeping it at the rate that was originally approved. So that's the second thing. And then the third thing that is noteworthy about this is there's decommissioning and early retirement tracking of the Lewis and Clark former coal units and the Heskett 1 and 2 units. Those are have been tracked in this rider, but they proposed in their rate case, which we just talked about, to move those into base rates, and so those are taken out of this now. And those will be settled. The cost of those and how much customers will pay ultimately for those will be determined when we as part of the rate case. So those are the three things that, as I see it, were noteworthy about this. And then ultimately it's a 15 cent per month increase when all is said and done.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, before we move to the next portfolio, I'd like to backtrack one, because I did have a comment that I wanted to get on the record about that, and that is Northern States Power Company Renewable Resource Cost Recovery, PU22-368. And I didn't vote differently than what I intended to. I intended to vote for it. I support the motion. But, and I think I expressed this some in the hearing, but it's been largely ignored by the company, I would say. But something they filed has really bothered me. They mention in their filing on this renewable resource cost recovery, the trends in their fuel cost recovery show that, and now I quote, energy cost savings have occurred in recent years that can be partially attributed to the company's expanding use of low-cost wind resources, unquote. Well, at least I'll give them credit, they use partially. But I still find it quite misleading. There's no evidence that they are isolating the effect of adding more wind when they're calculating that and taking into consideration that some of the changes might have been due to natural gas or something else. There are also other costs besides the fuel cost rider that are associated with adding wind to a system, and those costs are not reflected in the fuel cost rider. That's calculated elsewhere. So that statement, I just don't want to let that go and let it just kind of be memorialized into our official documents as a statement of fact. To me, it's the kind of hyperbole you might use in a rally at the park or maybe a State of the Union speech. But unless you're going to back it up with something, it had no business in our documents. And like I say, I think the adjustment is correct, but that is the kind of statement that causes companies to lose credibility in their other statements of facts that they make, in my opinion. With that, I think that your portfolio is concluded.
No, right. I have two more.
Did you have two more?
Yep.
Yeah.
6 and 7.
And then they were added after I was already down at the auctioneer.
No.
No.
They're in there. Paging.
6 and 7.
Yes, you do. They've been in here for a while.
Yes, you do. I'm sorry. My apologies.
Oh, hey. I'd be ready to pass.
too many legislative hearings.
Yeah. No. And I'm sure you're tired of hearing my voice.
I'll try and keep up with you now.
Is she ever going to be done?
Well.
Okay, moving right along.
I move the commission adopt the order of notice of probable violation in Public Service Commission, MDU, Montana Dakota Utilities Company Pipeline Safety Enforcement, case number GS22-406.
Second.
So on October, on August 24th, the Public Service Commission gas pipeline safety staff inspectors completed a biennial distribution operations and maintenance records inspection at MDU. And this inspection did occur in person. And on November 22nd, the manager issued a notice of probable violation to MDU alleging one violation of pipeline safety regulations and proposed a civil penalty in the amount of $500. On December 20th, the commission received a response from MDU indicating that they are not contesting the violation and that they would remit the total proposed civil penalty amount of $500. And on January 6th, we did receive the $500. So during their inspection from the pipeline safety, and this is a records review now, that it was noted that the records indicated that the capacity of pressure relief devices at pressure limiting station and pressure regulatory stations was not determined at the frequency required. Now that's just a lot of legalese. As far as that, so it's a safety procedure, not a, how did we describe it? It's a safety procedure in writing in their procedure manual, but not a consumer safety procedure. So it was a violation there. So MDU agreed to it. They've complied with it and paid it. So it is now settled.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
So Sherry and staff, I want to commend you guys for your diligence on this and MDU's recognition of this misstep and their agreement to it. Gosh, this natural gas pipeline system that leads up to so many homes in North Dakota is something we all depend on, and it's a huge, valuable resource for all of us. But it's also, it's risky. I mean, it isn't without risk. I shouldn't say it is risky, but it isn't without risk. So it's really important that all the required safety procedures and checks are completed. And our staff works to make sure that the company is following all those, and found this incidence where there's some documentation of some of those procedures that needed to improve. So I really commend you guys for paying attention to all this stuff and ensuring that it's done, and also applaud the company for holding its inspectors to the highest possible standards, because when this stuff isn't done, there can be some devastating effects. And so we really have to maintain the highest possible integrity of the system. So thank you, staff. Keep up the good work.
Yeah. I want to acknowledge Caleb, who is in the room, who has done a lot for this program and, in fact, has updated our North Dakota Public Service Commission Gas Pipeline Safety and Program Manual, so which has been very useful when they go out and do those on-site visits and reviews. So job well done.
Thank you, Caleb.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Believing there is no prejudice to the rights of the parties or the public interest, the finding the cases involve similar questions of law and fact, I move the Commission consolidate these cases for hearing under North Dakota Administrative Code Section 69-02-04-04, suspend the rates, and issue a notice of opportunity for consolidated hearing in Otter Tail Power Company 2023 Renewable Resource Cost Recovery Adjustment Factor Rates, case number PU-22-429, and Otter Tail Power Company 2023 Fuel Clause Adjustment Tariff, case number PU-23-27.
Second.
Thank you. On December 30th, 2022, in case number PU-22, Otter Tail Power Company filed a request for approval of its renewable resource cost recovery. The rider covers projected costs through March 31st, 2024, related to investments in the Murcott Wind Energy Project, the Ashtabula 3 Wind Farm, and a true-up of unused production tax credits associated with Ashtabula and Langdon Wind Energy Facilities. Otter Tail proposes to increase the current charge to 15.541% effective April 1st. The effect of rate change on the bill for a residential customer using 1,000 kilowatts is an increase of $5.77 per month. And then regarding the other case, which was filed on January 23rd, case number PU-2327, Otter Tail filed a proposed update to its energy adjustment rider to include MISO's planning resource auction capacity costs to the annual energy adjustment rider. Additional minor administrative updates have also been filed. The MISO PRA revenues is estimated to have an impact of $4 million in 2023. So these two cases will be consolidated. Those interested to comment on this application have until March 24th to file any comments. And if deemed appropriate, the Commission can determine this matter without a formal hearing.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio.
Thank you, Commissioner Fedorchak.
Thank you. So soon.
Amen.
All right, it's good to get all those out, though. So, all right, I have three items on my list. My first one, I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of Law and Order in Bowman Wind LLC, 208.7 megawatt Bowman Wind Project, Bowman County Siting Application, case number PU-21-121.
Second.
So I want to provide a little procedural history because, as you could tell by the numbers on this order, it's been this case has been at the commission for almost 2 years, and we typically like to move things along much faster than that, but there were some extenuating circumstances here that I'll go through. So on May 5th of 2021, the Public Service Commission, on March 30th of 2021, Bowman Wind filed the application with the commission for this project. And then on May 5th, the Public Service Commission deemed the application complete. So that's really when we consider the beginning of the permitting process, not when they file it, because sometimes there's things missing and we can't even consider things until the application is complete. So May 5th of 2021, we deemed it complete, conditioned on receiving a few additional items that were absent, but we wanted to move it along. And we had to receive them 30 days prior to the hearing. And we scheduled the original hearing for June 24th of 2021 in Bowman. Then on May 24th of 2021, we received a letter from Bowman Wind requesting us to postpone and reschedule the hearing, which we then did. They had a few things they wanted to continue working on with neighboring landowners prior to the hearing. So we postponed that hearing. And then later in June, we rescheduled the hearing to be set for August 24th of 2021, again in Bowman. We had that hearing as scheduled on August 24th of 2021. At the public hearing, we discovered that the local permitting process had not been completed yet, and that's contrary to our policy of having our hearings after the local permitting for wind facilities is completed. So we informed the company that our decision on the permit would be put on hold until they completed the local permitting process. So we pretty much just had the hearing, listened, took in all the information, and then we put our review on hold. Then later in, we move into May of 2022, Bowman Wind filed a letter informing us that the public hearing on the county's conditional use permit was going to be held in July of that year, and it was their understanding that a decision on the permit would be issued that day. So on July 15th then of 2022, Bowman Wind filed a motion for us to consider post-hearing filings, and that included the conditional use permit from Bowman County, which they had received, and then a number of other items. So with all of that information, we kind of got our process back in order again. We had a work session in August of 2022 and talked through all of the items, and in particular, discussions between Bowman Wind and Game and Fish. Game and Fish had expressed a number of concerns in their letters back and forth with the company. And so we really directed staff to, at that point, get with the company Game and Fish and get to the bottom of what remaining concerns still existed. So they did that throughout the fall, last fall, and even attended a meeting in November between Game and Fish and Bowman Wind as observers to hear firsthand what the issues were and how the company was going to address them. So with all of that, we had another work session, let's see, in January to discuss, again, finally, the the meetings that the company had had with Game and Fish and what came as a result of those and what the staff's opinion was of where things sat. So that brings us here to today. I'm going to go through the findings of fact now. So this is a wind project, approximately, I think this amount has been reduced, so I'm not going to say how many total acres are impacted, but will consist of 74 wind turbines with a nameplate capacity of 208.7 megawatts, with about 200 megawatts delivered to the grid. The proposed project layout is designed to accommodate a variety of turbine models under consideration, with the exception of a few locations where the company will be limited to working with only certain turbine models if those locations are ultimately chosen. Bowman Wind currently holds wind energy lease and easement agreements covering all the land needed to construct the project, and they anticipate construction to begin as early as fourth quarter of 2023, with commercial testing anticipated to take place after construction is complete as early as third quarter of 2024. And the estimated cost is approximately $300 million. The project will interconnect to the grid at the Basin and Electric Power Cooperative Rame substation located in Bowman County. And they entered on July 24th into a generation interconnection agreement with Southwest Power Pool for this project. In terms of studying the location, I'll go through a few items here. There are no U.S. Fish and Wildlife grassland or wetland easements in the project area. They conducted the environmental impact studies for the project area, and including avian studies, there was no known active balder golden eagle nests identified within the project area. They did greater sage-grouse lek surveys, and there are no known active greater sage-grouse leks within the project area. The closest is 0.8 miles west of the project area. And I'll go through the mitigation efforts in a minute. They did sharp-tailed grouse lek surveys, and the surveys indicated that there are no known sharp-tailed grouse leks within the project area. The closest turbine to a sharp-tailed grouse is lek is 0.6 miles, but this lek was unoccupied in both years of the company's lek surveys. And again, there's some mitigation efforts that I'll outline in a minute. The northern long-eared bat desktop habitat analysis found no potentially suitable summer long-eared bat habitat exists within the project area. In terms of grassland assessments, they did a unbroken grassland desktop and field assessment for the project. 5 of the 82 proposed turbine locations are located in whole or in part on unbroken grassland, impacting 0.12 acres of unbroken grassland. And let's see, I'm going to go through that later too. They did the SHPO consultation and studies as required, and collaborated with a number of the federal, state, and local agencies. In terms of siting criteria, there are no turbines located within exclusion areas. They meet all the setback requirements for state and local setbacks, and SHPO has concurred with the finding of no adverse effects for the project, provided it is constructed in the manner that has been documented. There are no project facilities located in floodplains. The sound levels within 100 feet of inhabited residence or community building, that's an avoidance area. They conducted those sound analysis. They found one residence modeled higher than that sound level, and they received a waiver from that residence. They also modeled the shadow flicker, and it will be below the 30 hours recommended at all the residences. So I want to go through the game and fish recommendations, which come next. There was extensive, as I mentioned, back and forth with Game and Fish. And they made, Game and Fish made four recommendations in its July 21st of 2021 letter that have all been considered in the project siting. The first recommendation was that all proposed turbines be removed from within greater sage-grouse priority conservation areas and at least 4 miles from known sage-grouse leks. Let's see. Throughout their consultation, Game and Fish noted that its main concern was with turbines 71 and 73. They had identified 6 turbines that fall within this 4 mile radius. Their greatest concern was turbines 71 and 72. And Bowman Wind agreed to, those were within 2 miles from the closest greater sage-grouse lek, and Bowman Wind agreed to remove those turbines, 71 and 73, to address Game and Fish's concerns and avoid potential impacts to habitat connectivity. 4 additional turbines 45, 46, 48, and 41, are sited within 4 miles of the greater sage-grouse lek, but these turbines are located on cultivated cropland at the edge of the 4 mile lek buffer and at the edge of the species range, which all of those factors minimize the potential for impacts to the greater sage grouse. We asked them for specific distances of those turbines from the sage grouse leks, and they are located 3.6, 3.8, 3.85, and 3.99 miles away from the lek, respectively. And in its final correspondence with Bowman Wind, discussing its recommendations, North Dakota Game and Fish did not mention removal of the 4 turbines on the edge of this 4 mile buffer. So this order does not require the removal of those 4 turbines. Secondly, Game and Fish said that if voluntary offsets are pursued, the primary strategy should be to recreate grasslands on broken land rather than preserving existing grasslands. In its plan, Bowman Wind committed to acquiring voluntary unbroken grassland conservation easements for the life of the project as a voluntary offset for potential grassland breeding bird displacement impacts. And that's as much as we can get into in regards to the offsets, because our orders are not contingent on them participating in those kind of offset agreements. Thirdly, in absence of 2 years of pre-construction sharp-tailed grouse surveys, all turbines should be sited off unbroken grasslands to avoid disturbance to any leks which may be present. 5 turbines are sited at least on partially unbroken grasslands. I mentioned earlier these turbines impact 0.12 acres of unbroken grasslands. To minimize potential impacts to individual sharp-tailed grouse that may lek in proximity to these turbines, Bowman Wind agreed to avoid all ground-disturbing construction activities at turbines 2, 6A, 42A, and 25, and S6 between March 15th and July 15th. That's the times when the sharp-tailed leks would be impacting those, sharp-tailed grouse would be impacting those leks. And then their final issue that Game and Fish mentioned was that they wanted the company to acknowledge that the private land open to sportsmen track agreements cannot be altered without landowner and Game and Fish consent, and Bowman Wind acknowledged that in the plots. Tract agreement is a signed legal agreement between Game and Fish and the landowner. So there's a number of measures the company is, additional measures that the company is implementing to minimize the impacts. I'm not going to go through all of those. The largest ones were the issues relating to the impacts to the wildlife and Additionally, they are committing to using light mitigating technology if approved by the FAA. And they are participating in all the required emergency, local emergency management processes, one call excavation notice system, etc. So with that, this is a project that has been considered for many, many months, much longer than we typically prefer. But that has largely been the result of the company's lengthy local permitting process that they had to complete prior to us completing our review, and then a pretty lengthy back and forth with North Dakota Game and Fish in an attempt to address all of the issues that they've identified. I feel like in the end, this order balances. It doesn't get 100% of the Game and Fish issues addressed exactly how they had requested originally, but I believe that a lot of the biggest issues have been addressed. And with this order, we're balancing the interests of the environmental concerns with the interests of the people living there, with the landowners, their rights to their development, and I think have been very careful to pay close attention to what Game and Fish is requesting and recognizing, you know, that we have to acknowledge those impacts long term to protect the long term ability of North Dakota to develop its wind resources while also minimizing impacts to the environment and the wildlife here. I think this order reaches that balance, and I'm going to be supporting it.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I have a number of topics I want to address, and some of them are questions, and some of them are just statements. But on page 5 of this draft of the order, and you highlighted this, the 40,948 acres. I think it was Monday I received from staff a map where my understanding of that was that they had withdrawn some areas, actually, and I had pointed a bunch of these out in our work session to the company. And again, I want to emphasize, I don't mind them paying those people. They can do what they want with their money. But these are areas they don't need to be tying up as a part of this facility footprint, because they're just not connected to it. I mean, they're connected, but they're not needed for it. And as I look at a map that shows several townships, so it's hard to gauge it, but it would look to me like it's probably 6,000 or 8,000 acres. But that will be reduced from this, or has that already been subtracted to get the 40,000? I think 40 is what it had been before.
Commissioner Christman, I believe that this is the original number, and this does not reflect the reduction. So I meant to ask about that yesterday, and I got sidetracked by a number of other things, but I'm going to just count on Adam. The final order includes the corrected amount, and what is that corrected amount? 33,890. Okay. So the one we sign will have that number in it. Okay. Thank you.
So that's about 7,000 acres. My 6 or 8
job.
Was not too bad, was it?
And thank you for making that request and doing that. That's really valuable and important.
Absolutely. Then I want to move to some of these Game and Fish issues. And, you know, as in some previous sighting things, it's hard to know how much weight to give the evidence of some of Game and Fish and U.S. Fish and Wildlife's concerns they bring to us when they don't come and stand for cross-examination. But they are the agencies that, by law, we give notice to, because we're seeking input from, because of they have expertise in these areas that are key in our decision making on these projects. And so two of the things that at our work session, as I understood it, Game and Fish was still objecting to, were a few turbines that were within 4 miles of that sage grouse lake, and then a few turbines that were on broken grasslands. And first, starting with the ones within 4 miles, I thought we left that work session with kind of an understanding that those were going to be removed. Did I misunderstand that?
It would be my impression that you did, because I recalled that Commissioner Augenhoffert had suggested that. I don't remember you saying whether you wanted to or not, and I said I wasn't there yet. I would bring forward an order, and you guys could look at what I brought forward.
Well, so if we don't, when Game and Fish has, you know, a standard, the 4 miles, mm-hmm. and we say, well, we'll remove the ones that are within 2, but these others from 3.6 on upward toward 3.99, they're on the edge. So 4 doesn't really mean 4, it means around 4, but if it's on the edge, it's okay. So now I guess we're down to 3.6. So does that mean in the future things that are we just going to keep working this down to where it's nothing? Or when a number is given, is it meaningful to us? I'm concerned about our standards we're setting here.
Sure. I think that's a very fair concern. I will say that this gets into our requirement to weigh the evidence and to get at the very things that you talked about, you know, what the company says, what the Game and Fish is saying. And I pored over and worked with staff multiple times, pored over the final email from Game and Fish and the language included in it. And they said, the department believes the project modifications to which APEX has committed are important changes for minimizing impacts of sensitive wildlife areas. We are encouraged and commend you for the removal of turbines 71 and 73 to protect an active sage-grouse lake only approximately 2 miles away. We also agree that construction activities should be avoided during the proposed window, et cetera, et cetera. Then they moved to their second recommendation, which was that on regarding the 5 turbines on unbroken grasslands, and what they should do with that. And they really seemed to emphasize more than anything else. They did not repeat their request to have those 4 turbines on the edge of that 4 mile, you know, toward the edge of that 4 mile area removed again. They did not repeat that. And they went into, quite honestly, I think their biggest issue, which we can't do anything about, is that they want to have the companies recreating new wildlife areas rather than preserving existing unbroken grasslands. We can't do anything about that. So I then said, well, okay, what are the factors with those 4 turbines? The factors are they're on unbroken grass. They're in cropland. They're in the middle of fields, agricultural fields. So that is very unlikely that the sage grouse is going to lek there. And so they are on the really farther edge of the that 4 mile radius. They're still within it, I acknowledge that, but they're, you know, a good distance away. And they are near, if you look at the maps of what else is occurring out there, there's quite a lot of development out there. So yeah. I think for the landowners who are impacted by owning the land on those 4 turbines, I think we're obligated to consider all those factors as well. and to really weigh what's the impact on the potential impact on the sage grouse versus the potential impact on the landowners for requiring them to remove those turbines and not allow them to have that financial gain. I think that in this case, I think it's very reasonable to allow the four turbines to move forward. Ultimately, I think it makes it easier for Game and Fish to get some, to have a working relationship with the wind facilities and landowners when there's some common sense applied rather than strict 4 mile, you know, strict unbending setbacks like that.
Well, so for the record, I wanted to get that discussion on our record because some things changed after our work session. At our work session, at least I didn't have that map handy that showed all the oil field development there. Mm-hmm. It was in our files, but our files are like this on this, mm-hmm. and staff dug it out later. That fact was what I found compelling, but the fact that I'm not going along with this because, well, it's almost 4 miles. To me, you have to draw a line somewhere, just like on a pipeline, for instance. We have a line kind of drawn in the sand that it can't be less than 500 feet from a residence without a waiver. And yeah, it would be no more disruptive at 499 than 501, but you have to draw a line somewhere. And I don't want to be doing that to our experts in Game and Fish, but I do think the oil field development is a good factor. Then this isn't a question, but the company has emphasized this as far as the ones on unbroken grasslands, and while it's only 0.12 or 1.2 acres,
0.12.
It trivializes it, and I think that's just a big exaggeration because, yes, a turbine takes just a tiny amount of square footage that amounts to a fraction of an acre, but the wildlife that is impacted, I have a hard time believing that every one of these is in the middle of a field and there's a rock pile or something, so that wasn't broken, but everything else around it was. Well, this facility is having an impact on the acreage around that, and that is the problem. And that gets into the mitigation thing, and I agree with you that that is not in our wheelhouse, but I do want to have on the record my frustration with this. Game and Fish has a mission as well, and U.S. Fish and Wildlife, of protecting our native grasslands because that's what protects our biodiversity. And it's easy to just get caught up in, well, I'm seeing plenty of deer and pheasants, so everything is fine. It's the little things that are unidentifiable and unnoticeable to most of us that start that cycle. And when we are burning through our native species grasses, and there's a lot of this wildlife that just won't use other species of grasses for their mm-hmm. lives. And so Game and Fish is doing their level best to maintain native species of grasses. And when a company does, outside of our responsibility, choose to do some kind of mitigation, because by doing that, to me, they're acknowledging that they are having an adverse impact on something that's important. Why else would you do a mitigation? Game and Fish says, essentially, to mitigate damage to unbroken grasslands, you need to plant native species of grasses somewhere else where it's probably already been broken. Lots of people have land that grandpa broke up one time that shouldn't have been, and if someone invested the money it costs, it's expensive to start native species grasses. A lot of people would love to have it back, but you can't afford it. But this kind of mitigation would be the place where Game and Fish emphasizes that is the way to do mitigation. Don't just go pay a penance and say you've mitigated it. Well, a lot of these other programs where you just give some money to some wildlife club or something like that, or go and find some landowner with unbroken grasslands that could never be productive by being broken up, will never be broken up, and just give them some money to say, yeah, I promise not to break it up when it wasn't going to happen anyway. That's not mitigating anything. That is just a payoff with a veil over it and being disguised as mitigation. And I find that disappointing, and I just worry that we get to a point where Game and Fish and U.S. Fish and Wildlife are not going to continue to be involved in our hearings, because at the end of the day, they just get snubbed on when it comes to wind development. I think their efforts are much more productive on transmission lines and generation facilities, like smaller generation facilities, but when it comes to wind, it just, their voice is going unheard. So, I don't know if you wanted to respond. It wasn't.
I agree with you on the mitigation. I think the companies need to step up and do it. It is a compromise, and they ought to be doing their very best to mitigate in the most effective way. I wish we didn't have I wish we weren't curtailed in our ability to impact those things.
Absolutely, and I don't know how to get the word to them, because I don't see that it would cost any more. You know, you could just as well pay someone to do something useful as opposed to paying someone to do something that is unuseful.
Mm-hmm. It's going to make Game and Fish more cooperative long term. So, land is big.
I think it will make them less cooperative.
If they were to go along with what they're requiring, it would make them more cooperative long term, I think.
The last thing that I want to point out in the last wind farm that was approved by this commission, which I could not support, during our hearing, we had discussion of the impact to the grid, which I know there's disagreement up here. I believe is something that should be being considered and factored in, and I believe that it's in the law, but that argument, I guess, is for another day. I just want to point out that in this case, I'm also trying to be a fair regulator, and because of some things with the county down there, I apply more of the blame on the developer. They should have had their county agreement before they applied to us, but they didn't. And so this got delayed a long time. In fairness, when we had this hearing, we did not know what we've learned since about impacts to the grid. And at least I have learned a lot in the time frame since. And so the questions weren't asked, and I have some real concerns, because where they're hooking in is a substation that I believe less than 20 years ago was cited by this commission, and their company came in for that transmission line and that substation and cited an important need for that facility. I'm doubtful that they way overbuilt it and it now just magically has plenty of capacity for this too and is not going to cause any kind of congestion problems. Maybe not just this, but if more keep added, I think we should be looking at it. But like I say, in fairness, when we had this hearing, that was something that was not on at least my radar screen yet because of what's happened in more recent times at the RTO levels. And so the company just never got a chance to address that, so I'm not going to hold that against us. I'm going to vote for the motion.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
All right, my next one will be much faster. I move the commission assess an application fee of $60,000 and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in One Oak Rockies Midstream amended certificate number 203 and route permit number 213. Citing application case number PU-23-15.
Second.
So, One Oak has filed an application to basically amend the permit and add a 4-mile extension to one of its LNG lines. It will increase the maximum delivery of that line from 50,000 to 70,000 barrels per day, with potential long-term maximum of 160,000 barrels per day. With this motion today, we are issuing this notice of opportunity for hearing. If anyone wishes to request a hearing or has comments or issues we should think about, they need to be received here by March 24th, and if deemed appropriate, the commission can determine the matter without a formal hearing. I will just say, as an aside, that you know this is generally a project that we need more takeaway capacity for LNGs, because our natural gas is so rich, and these LNGs can be spun off and taken away separately, which makes the natural gas easier to inject in our interstate pipeline system, and doesn't allows for more capacity through that system. So it's generally a high demand, and so we'll be looking carefully at this project, but want to do so in as efficient a manner as possible.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
All right, my final motion, I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order, and Basin Electric Power Cooperative, Pioneer Generating Station Phase 4, Williams County Siting Application, case number PU-22-380.
Second.
So, let's see, on October 7th, Basin Electric filed with us this application for a certificate of site compatibility for Pioneer Generating Station Phase 4. On November 30th, we deemed the application complete, scheduled a hearing for January 5th in Williston, and we held that hearing as scheduled. This is a significant new generating resource being constructed in the heart of the Bakken. The proposed project is located on the existing Pioneer Generating Station site. It is a 120 acre parcel, and they're expanding that with a 160 acre parcel, all located in Williams County, 15 miles northwest of Williston. The project consists of six 18.8 megawatt natural gas RICE units, reciprocal internal combustion engines, and then two natural gas fired simple cycle combustion turbines. The capacity of this project, according to my notes, it's not included here, but in my notes from the hearing, the total capacity will be about 583 megawatts of this natural gas-fired generating unit. And then the estimated cost, with the cost of the generators plus the transmission line that's not part of this permit but is part of the project, will be $788 million. In seeking this permit, Basin Electric initiated correspondence with 35 federal, state, and local agencies, and that input has been considered. And they did all of the various surveys and study requirements as needed. They did not record any exclusionaries in the permit area. They identified one avoidance area, a wetland, but it won't be impacted by the construction. It's outside of the construction zone. This zone is already zoned for industrial use. The 160 acres of new land has been converted from ag to industrial use. The project will utilize natural gas, a primary energy source from sources located in the vicinity of the project. And so by proposing to construct the project on the existing Pioneer Generating site and adjacent land, Basin Electric will reduce the cost of the infrastructure and the transmission interconnection. So this site made a lot of sense from that standpoint. They've agreed to comply with any of the requirements or recommendations made by local, state, or federal agencies. They are putting together an emergency response plan, and we'll get those submitted to all the required agencies participating in the one call notification system, etc. The one interesting thing about this project is they do not have an interconnection agreement yet with Southwest Power Pool, so they're still in the studying process. So I would note that we probably wouldn't be here right now approving in the position to approve this order if we were required to consider impacts to the grid by all the new generators, because we wouldn't have even the study from the RTO done at this point, so we wouldn't be able to. I think that would be the very minimal requirement considered by that law. And so we wouldn't be here today being in the position to permit that if that law were to pass. So my opposition to that continues to be firm. So with that, though, I think this is an incredible new resource for North Dakota, for the region, for the entire SPP region. I really applaud Basin Electric for investing in dispatchable thermal generation like this. It's going to be a huge asset. It's great for balancing the wind on their system, and they are projecting significant growth in their demand. Interestingly, during the hearing, they said that they reached a system peak. It was a new system peak in 2021 of 1,585 megawatts, and then in 2022, December, they blew through that and hit a new all-time peak of 1,666 megawatts, and their peak demand in 2022 13 was 800 megawatts. So it really speaks to the growth on the power use in that area, and they're projecting significant new growth. And so they're really going to need this dispatchable resource to serve that power need. So I'm pleased to support it.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. I usually mark up the calendar, and I did not get to doing that. But I know our next regular commission meeting is at 10 o'clock on February 22nd, 2 weeks from today. We have no informal this afternoon, beyond some legislative discussions and RTO updates. Those are the main things on the calendar. So with that, we will stand and recess.
Mr. Chairman?
Pardon me?
Mr. Chairman, do you intend to have a dissenting opinion?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you.
I think it's been stated well enough. We'll